Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined by a brand new guest, Kim Morrison. Kim, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you.
So before we dive into talking about the Dr. Sleep novel, can you tell the listeners a little about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a horror writer. I write for Ghouls magazine, and thanks to my mum, I have been a Stephen King fan since I was very little. So I'm really excited to talk about Dr. Sleep.
My fandom hasn't been since I was very little, but my mom did start buying the books in the mass market paperback size when they were being released. So like the copy of Carrie is like, you know, 40 plus years old or something. It's a lot of the books she bought up through, I want to say like 94 with Wizard and Glass. So it's like I have these fragile copies that I have to be very careful with when I'm reading. And now it's like a hodgepodge of hardcovers, paperbacks, you know, all different sizes because I just started filling in all of the blanks from, you know, library sales and stuff like that. But seeing those books constantly as a kid, I was kind of like, I really want to read these. And she had them all in like order of when she bought them. So they were mostly in chronological order. And I was like, you know what? It's going to be a podcast. And that's how this started.
Nice.
So for Dr. Sleep specifically, had you read this book before signing up for the episode? Was it a new read for you?
Yeah, I had read it before. I went back and looked on my Goodreads to see when I'd actually read it, and I'd read it in 2013, which I think is when it came out. Again, thanks to my mum, she had bought the hardback, and I realised I'd never actually read The Shining either. I'd seen the film a bunch of times in the miniseries, but I'd never read the book, so I read them both back to back, and then I hadn't read it since then. I'd obviously went and saw the film, but yeah, I reread it for this to make sure that I had it straight in my head what happens in the film, what happens in the book. But I loved it when I was reading it, and especially I think reading it together with The Shining, it made it like a really cool experience to go back and revisit these characters like 40 years later.
Yeah, the release date I have is actually 2014, so maybe you got it earlier than we did over here.
I'll maybe double check that. I'm sure it was I think it was the very end of 2013 that I had in my Goodreads, but it might be wrong, but it was definitely right about when it came out. Was the first time I read it.
Yeah, I ended up just buying up all of the newer books knowing that I wasn't going to get to them just yet, because I am still missing a few, but Dr. Sleep, I had actually seen the movie first. And obviously, by the time that came out, I think this podcast had already been underway. So I had read The Shining a while ago. I made the mistake of not rereading The Shining before doing the podcast episode on it, though. And then my brain was like, oh no, this was Kubrick, wasn't it?
Yeah, I do that. I do that a lot with there's a lot of Stephen King things where I think I've seen the films far more than I've read the books. And when I go back and read them, I'm like, oh yeah, that bit's not in there at all. That's just film specific. So yeah, I definitely needed to reread it because the film was freshest in my head and I knew that they were very different.
Yeah, I saw the movie in theaters when it came out, so it was like long ago enough to where I don't remember all of the exact details. So then reading this, it was kind of like looking at it with a fresh set of eyes because I was like, oh, okay, I see what was similar in the movie and what was a little different. But with the book itself, because I hadn't read it, I was like, okay, I know what happens in the movie, so I'm very curious to see, you know, how close Mike Flanagan played it to the source material, because he was kind of put in a tough spot because of how much people love Kubrick's version of The Shining, and you obviously want to be faithful to the source material as much as you can be, at least. And, you know, the book, I was a little daunted by the length. But even though it's over 500 pages for the copy that I have, it didn't feel like it was that long of a book.
No, I think it does. I think what it does really well is because it splits the sort of main character between Danny and Abra and Rose the Hat. It doesn't feel long at all because you're sort of going through their different stories at simultaneous points in their life. So yeah, it really sort of feels like three stories jammed together. It didn't feel very long at all. I felt like everything was sort of rushing, I guess, because you're going through Abra's life and you know what's coming when she hits like a certain age. It felt like it was a very like cohesive story. And I know some of Stephen King's longer books, like the Tommyknockers and stuff, definitely feel their length, but I didn't feel it with this one. I kind of rushed through it.
Yeah, and it does start a little slow for me, but I do like that we spend a lot of time catching up with Danny before we dive into this whole new story with Abra and Rose the Hat, because he's a character who we haven't seen in so long that I feel like he deserves the time that King takes to set this up. And for some people, you know, it might be a little tough to get through that if they haven't read the book before, just because you kind of want to get to the meat of the story. But setting up Danny is crucial for how the story plays out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's quite similar to what he did in The Shining, I guess, with Jack. You spend a lot of time with him before they go up to the hotel and things start getting bad, so that you've got a sort of idea of his character. And I think, yeah, like you said, you kind of need that with Danny, especially because I think a lot of like horror things, when you've spent a lot of time with a character as a kid, it's like that iconic, like kind of creepy kid thing, shifting it to an adult is something that doesn't happen like super often. So we sort of missed all his like teen years and stuff, and we're just kind of chucked in when he's like in his 20s, I think. So yeah, we have to sort of spend that time readjusting to what he is now, and sort of showing, I guess, the effects that the Overlook and his dad and everything have kind of had on him in later life. I like that it just spends a little time on him immediately, like post-hotel. There's bits of the ghosts coming back to see him and stuff, but it doesn't spend too much time on like that trauma. It sort of moves on to the different stuff that he has to deal with later in life that he also like attributes to his dad, but it's not necessarily too like Overlook heavy, I guess, to start with, because it just sort of focuses on what's happened to him since in a very like human way rather than the supernatural side of it.
Plus, you have the parallels between Danny and Jack that are being presented too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important, because even though he ultimately spent more time with Wendy as a kid because of what happens in The Shining, you have just the impact that Jack has had on Danny's life, even though at this point he hasn't been around for most of it. And I think as people grow up, and if you know their parents fairly well, you kind of see these things. You're like, oh, this person is more like their mom or more like their dad. And it was really important for King to show that with Danny and to not have Jack and Wendy just written off.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, even though he grew up with Wendy, it's obviously that Jack has had that huge influence on him. And there is like bits in The Shining where Jack's family, it was sort of a family line thing, and I think Danny talks about it near the end of Doctor Sleep as well. It's like this underlying anger issue that kind of goes through their whole family, and obviously Jack and Danny sort of turn to alcohol to cope with that as well. But I guess Danny's tries to show Abra at the end as well, I guess, that like it doesn't, like it will be a huge part of you as a person, this impact on your family and everything, but it doesn't have to like define who you are. It doesn't have to go the way it went with Jack. It can end up the way it went with Danny, and you can be happier in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely want to talk about the fact that AA plays a huge role in this story as well, because a lot of people know that King went through a massive, massive drug phase, you know? Mm-hmm. So this felt like King's way of almost putting himself in the story, because they talk a lot about write what you know, and I have no idea if King went to, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days or something like that, but there was an authenticity to it that you could feel just oozing off of the pages as you read them.
Yeah, and I think it's important that he sort of shows that it's not like an easy thing. Like, I think Jack always tried to just like give up alcohol and kind of cold turkey it and go for it, and it clearly didn't work. He always dipped back in. I think to show Danny struggling, and even when he's like 10 years sober or whatever, he's still like pulling into the car parks of bars and debating and having a drink. It really shows that it's like this like lifelong thing that he has beat just now, but he's always gonna have to keep like fighting. It's not something that just goes away, and I think that's yeah, I think that was important for him to frame it that way and to spend so much time on the AA meetings and Danny building up this like support, you know, of people that were able to help him with it as well, to show that it's a difficult thing and Jack just wasn't really into fighting it in that way. But Danny, even though he has done some very questionable things as the book starts, he is always actively trying to fight it and make his life better and make the lives of those around him better as well.
Right. And you have the fact too that his abilities start coming back as he stops drinking. And this is how he ends up with the name Dr. Sleep, because he has this job and basically he's comforting patients as they're on their deathbed, essentially. And he's assisted by this cat. And it's one of those things where without all of this context with Danny's life and how he's turned out, it wouldn't make everything that comes after as powerful, because you can feel the sincerity in later moments when he's talking to Abra and he's worried about meeting up with her because she's this young girl who doesn't look like him because she's black, he's not, and they're kind of like, well, you can just call me Uncle Dan. And, you know, obviously there are mixed race families all the time, everywhere. And you can tell that he has a concern for this girl. And because of this ability that they both have, they're connected in a way people wouldn't understand. Regular people wouldn't understand. Obviously, they talk to her parents and all of this stuff and they come around, but it does take some time. So you see Danny being more thoughtful as he stops drinking too, which I really like.
I think that, like, he initially started drinking and stuff to block out the powers because they were connected to the Overlook and he's never had anything good from them, I guess. And then, yeah, when he starts to sober up and they start to come back, I guess he starts to realize that how they could be helpful, like, not just to him but to other people. And I guess he starts taking on what Dick Halloran said to him about how, like, he was there for Danny when he needed him. So, like, he's been given this gift and could be there for other people in the future, and just to sort of think of it that way. So, yeah, I think it's cool. He's obviously got additional things to deal with that regular alcoholics wouldn't have, but I think it is cool that he just embraces the powers and realizes the good ways that he can help people. He can help the people in the hospice, and he can also help Abra, and that's sort of a thing that's the way that they use it as an argument with their parents and stuff. They're basically like we're probably the only people that can defeat the True Knot, and we need to do it now or they're going to keep killing others. So he really, yeah, he just like throws himself into it. He sort of did what Dick did. He chucks himself halfway across the country to save this kid and save other people. So yeah, I think it's cool that he embraces that and realizes that even though it was scary, it was a scary thing for him obviously when he was younger to sort of deal with, that now that he's sort of got it straight in his head, it can actually be a really good thing for not just him but for other people.
And it's not like he drops everything the first time that Abra makes contact with him. It's something that builds and builds, and over time they start to email and then they meet in person, and you can tell that he's a little nervous about it too. He's not just diving head in right away. He's gathering information and he's going about it in a way that maybe you wouldn't expect for someone who was going through AA and getting clean and things like that, but you can tell that Danny specifically drank to suppress his powers. So it's not like he's not an intelligent person when he's not drinking. It's just he was doing it for a very specific reason.
Yeah, I think it is cool that it takes them so long to build that connection. And I can't remember how they deal with that in the film. I don't think there's as much like her being there for her entire life basically as a presence in Danny's life, but I think that's cool that he, when she reaches out to him when she's so young, he sort of realizes how powerful she is and what they have in common and everything. And then like the older she gets, when she starts specifically asking for his help, and when she sees the baseball boy getting killed and things, I think he clearly believes her a lot more because he knows how powerful she is, and then he recognizes that, you know, he went through terrible things as a kid when he was even younger than her. If she's directly like asking for help, then he really has to help her. But yeah, I think it's probably a sign of when the book was written, like maybe if he'd written Doctor Sleep right after The Shining, he might not have been as bothered about the whole like Danny coming across as a weirdo on the internet thing as Danny's worried about. But I think it's like important that they touch on it, because yeah, like it's rather than just using like weird film logic of like, oh yeah, it's like a 12-year-old girl meeting up with a guy and it's fine, they do sort of try and make it look as normal as possible because we know there's nothing weird going on, and then also trying to like explain it to her parents in the easiest way possible, which is a challenge. But yeah, I think the way they build their relationship, it feels very realistic. And I think maybe the thought of Dick Halloran traveling halfway across the country to try and save a kid and a woman he just met maybe isn't as realistic as Danny building this relationship with someone and then realizing that they need help and deciding to help them as well. It feels more like plausible and something that he would like risk his life doing, because he realizes that the sort of larger extent of the problem, I guess, of the true knot, that even if they leave Abra alone, the chances of them going for other kids is probably quite high.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Abra witnessing the murder of the boy and the true knot, because I don't think I knew going into the movie, at least, that they were going to be these vampire-like characters, because to me, it's like, okay, Salem's Lot is King's vampire story, and I didn't really know anything about Dr. Sleep other than the fact that it was a sequel to The Shining, so that kind of took me by surprise, and we get to read into these characters a little more in the book, I think, than the movie because of time and, you know, things like that, but they are a group of quasi-immortal psychic vampires, and that is just such a description.
Yeah, I think it makes them quite an interesting villain. I mean, there's been sort of films and stuff that have like kind of more energy vampires rather than like drinking your blood type. Yeah. But I think it's a cool reason to have them like attracted to kids with The Shining. Like the reason that they target them is because their steam tastes better and like makes them live for longer. I think it's a good sort of way of having a completely different villain than the Overlook, but also having this connection back to Danny as a kid so that he can build this connection with Abra. And then also it's a cool way to give them all like their own specific powers, the way they work together as a group, but they all have a sort of a ability that they can do themselves is really cool, I think. And it just makes them a really interesting villain. And I like the fact that they just look human most of the time. There's sort of descriptions later on of Rose like detaching the bottom of her jaw and just having one massive tooth when she feeds and things, which I think sounds quite creepy. I don't think yeah. I don't remember how they look in the film when they feed, but I remember thinking, oh, that's cool, like just the thought of it all being just quite monstrous at the moment where they feed and then just going back to normal. But I quite like the thought of them just being these like people that travel around in RVs and look very like nobody would pay attention to them. They're just sort of like middle-aged normal people, but really they're this very organized group. And I think it's cool. It's a different angle, like you said, when you think of vampires and Stephen King, you definitely think Salem's Lot, but I think he sort of created this whole different type of villain. And the fact that they specifically target children is bad enough, but these like special children, which obviously Stephen King features quite a lot in his books, kids having special powers and things, it feels just extra like evil, because you can just imagine all the other kids that have been in his books and stuff like being targets of them. It just feels extra horrible. So I think it's cool that you get all these chapters where you get to like relate to them. Rose is an amazing villain. She's really like just interesting, but it's also just, they're just horrible. Like they're so evil, and it's a really cool mix of being able to read her chapters and just be really interested. And then I think the the baseball boy scene is really the only one where you actually see them properly murdered in someone, and you're sort of reminded, like, oh yeah, they are actually terrible.
Right. And King also adds in the caveat that even though Bradley died, he gave them all the measles and they start dying off. And there's, you know, some sort of poetic justice there, because it's like, well, this is what you get for going after children. And these things are going to happen at a higher rate if you're going after children, because, you know, children get vaccinated at roughly the same age. But, you know, there's always people who don't want to do those things. And you have the fact, too, that because these villains are going after very specific people, it just makes the whole thing feel more personal. It doesn't feel random.
I'd sort of forgot how long that they are, like, aware of Abra's existence as well, because I think it's like a couple of years between when they kill the baseball boy and Rose sort of first senses her. She sort of wants to leave her to, like, mature and get, like, to the, her peak steam level before they go after her. I think the thought that, yeah, that they're, like, specifically hunting these people down, even the scene where they're like, they've sort of zoned in on the baseball boy's signal and they know he's there, and they all sort of all split up to try and find him. And then when he leaves his baseball field, like, one of them's just sitting waiting with the RV. It's very, yeah, it's not, I think a lot of other vampire films and things like that, it's always just like someone skulking in the darkness, and if you walk down the wrong alley, you get eaten or whatever. You're right, this does feel very personal, and it's sort of that thing, like, I think as a parent, you, like, hope you can protect your child, but if someone's got, like, a weird psychic link to them and they know when they're going to be on their own and they can, like, hypnotize them and stuff, then you just feel like it's really, like, I have a daughter. She wasn't born when I read the book, but she was when I went to see the film, and I just remember, like, being absolutely double traumatized by the baseball voicing, because you're just like, oh my goodness, it's so horrible to think that you just, like, wouldn't, there's no real way, I think that's what they try and tell Abra's parents, there's no way you're going to be able to keep her safe from the True Knot once they decide that they want her. Like, you have to just fight them, which I think is the scariest thing of all, that there's just no, like, running away from them, because they always know where you've gone.
Right, and it takes Abra's parents a little while to get on board, you know. They go to her father, David, and the family doctor is kind of in the loop because he's been told by the parents about some things that Abra's done over the years as a child and sort of these weird things that they couldn't explain. So there's an expectation set up that these people have witnessed things that would make them a little more likely to believe what Dan is saying. And even still, I like that it doesn't happen right away and they're just like, oh yeah, okay, we understand.
That's something that happens quite a lot in horror films and stuff. People are just like, I mean, not, I'm not saying, like, don't believe your children, but yeah, if your child comes to you with something, like, weird sounding like that, I think most people would, like, take a second to believe it. So yeah, I appreciate that there's a whole sort of chunk of them trying to figure out what's the best way to break it to them and get them on side, because they realize that's the important part. So, like, Danny speaking to the doctor so that they can sort of get that in, so that he can, like, get that in with the dad without seeming too weird, and then trying to bring the mum on board and things. It seems, yeah, it's a very believable way of trying to do it. I like the fact that at the end, like, Abra's involved, but she's not actually there. Like, that seems a lot more realistic as well than just taking her to go and fight them, which I think is what happens in the film. It felt like a better way of doing it, like them working together with their powers rather than her necessarily being there and being properly in danger. Because usually I think in Stephen King books, if kids are having to take on monsters, it's usually like them on their own, like it or whatever, where like their parents maybe don't believe them or they've never approached them. So I think in Dr. Sleep, where it's mostly adults and Abra there, the way they dealt with it and involved her and sort of tried to keep her out of danger as much as possible definitely felt quite realistic.
Yeah, and I love that Dan has a friend who is willing to stick by him no matter what in Billy, because obviously when you read The Shining, you're very concerned for Danny. And then now that he's cleaned up and he has a steady job, he has a place to live, you know, you're feeling very hopeful for what comes next. And Rose the Hat is obviously a wrench in his plans to just kind of get his life back on track, but he stays the course and Billy's going along with him and just making sure, you know, Abra's safe too, and doing all of these things that you wouldn't necessarily have expected Dan to have a person like that in his life. And it's really nice to see, because that is how they're able to get rid of the raiding party that Rose sends, which includes her boyfriend, lover, whatever you want to call him, Crow Daddy, which, what a name. Some of these names.
I know, right?
But I just thought that was a very nice relationship to see for Dan, because we saw how his more, I guess you would call them, romantic relationships were in the beginning of the book. And for him to have a friendship that seems like, you know, it's going to stick is nice. And you also have the twist in this too, where he goes and visits, hopefully I'm pronouncing this right, Conchetta. And he is able to learn from Abra's grandmother that he and Abra's mom, Lucy, are half siblings, because of course Jack had an affair at some point.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that bit until I got about halfway through the book, and there was a bit where Abra said something about, like, what do you think, our powers are hereditary? And I was like, I'm sure they end up being related at the end, and I forgot about this. I think it's quite cool, like, the Shining was all about Danny being very isolated. His parents were there, but they didn't understand him, they didn't understand his power, and he was just very, like, on his own. And even though he had Dick, who understood the power, he was very far away. So I think in Doctor Sleep it would have been really easy to sort of replicate that again and just be telling the same story when he was an adult, but instead they give him friends, they give him Billy, they give him Abra, who has powers and they understand. And then by the end as well, he has this, like, second family, like, he has a second chance to have a happier life with friends, with family, and with this other person that has powers that he can sort of hopefully, I guess, give her more guidance that he was sort of missing, and help her sort of avoid the traits that he clearly thinks are very strong hereditary on the side of his dad, sort of the rage and the drinking and things. So I thought it was quite a cool touch that they ended up being related, because it sort of does bring home that even though Jack does get more of a redemptive end at the end of the Shining book than he does at the film, it sort of brings home that he was still a bit of a horrible person, and he wasn't making good choices when he was married to Wendy and when he had a kid at home and things, but that something nice can come out of it, I guess, for Danny and for Abra's mum as well, because she obviously didn't know her dad, lost her mum very young, and then she's just lost her grandmother. So it was nice for her to sort of have an extra bit of family on the side as well.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you want to bring up from the book before we sort of talk about this big grand finale at the Overlook site?
I liked as well, just, I think I said this a bit earlier, but just how much time we sort of spent with Abra sort of growing up and just getting a good indication of, like, how powerful she was and all the different things she could do, and the fact that she had sort of decided to hide it a little bit from her parents because she knew it freaked them out, but she'd always, like, embraced it herself. Like, she never seemed to really have the problems that Danny had of, like, being scared of it or whatever. She always recognized that it was quite a powerful thing, and that she was could get more control of things and the different things she could do. So I think that it was cool how much time we spent with her, and just to see the different effect, I guess, having powers like that as a kid could have on someone who wasn't stuck in a terrifying hotel with a bunch of ghosts. So it was nice to see how she sort of, yeah, just adapted that into her life.
I also like the part where the parents kind of thought it was going away as she got older, but really it was just her hiding it more because she knew they didn't fully understand and, you know, didn't want to disappoint them and things like this. And because of her age at the time, you're like, okay, it's sad that she felt that way. But at the same time, like you said, if a kid comes to you with something completely out there and unrealistic, the likelihood of parents believing them is going to be pretty low until, you know, Dan came along and explained everything. And then you really felt like she came into her own after that, more so than she had previously.
Yeah, I think being able to just be really open, I think especially with her dad, because her mum knew there was a bit more power lingering about than her dad did. He sort of had sort of shown already that he wasn't really into like superstition or anything that sounded a bit magical, so he was sort of shutting himself off to it a bit more. I think by the fact that at the end of the book she gets to be more open and more like herself, it's obviously going to take that stress off her, and it'll clearly, her powers seem to be getting stronger as she's getting older, which is usually the opposite of what happens with kids in horror. They usually sort of lose them. The fact that she's getting stronger, I think the fact that her parents are aware of it by that point is really important, because then that'll help her not go mad in her own head trying to like hide them from them. She can hopefully get the support from them and Danny as well, that'll help her sort of learn to deal with them better.
One of the other things I loved about Abra too was her ability to just taunt Rose so well, because that is really what leads us up into this grand finale. She gets in touch with Rose and she's just taunting her so much, and Rose is just completely losing it. And to read that whole encounter, it was just so entertaining. And you know, you can feel yourself rooting for Abra as she's doing this.
Yeah, I know, it's it's very impressive. Like, I like the fact that she was terrified doing it, but like she did it because she did have that like knowledge in herself that she felt stronger, and she felt that she could take on Rose. And even though she was absolutely like terrified of doing it, she had that confidence. She wasn't like putting it on. It's the fact that every time she's kind of talking about fighting Rose or whatever, she's got like this kind of angry smile on her face, like Dan says. It's nice to see her like sort of taking that anger that Danny's sort of worrying about that she has, but sort of channeling it into something good, I guess. But yeah, it's quite refreshing to see her just like as this young teenage girl just being scared of the situation, as you should be, but also just having this absolute confidence in herself that she's like we're gonna beat you, and like how much she knows that they deserve it for the stuff that they've done to other kids. She's just got no question about getting revenge on them.
It was just such a fun moment. And like you mentioned briefly earlier, they don't take Abra with them. Instead, she uses her astral projection, which her powers are even surpassing Dan's at this point. And just Rose being able to see her there without her actually being there is so helpful, because Rose is so focused on her that even though Rose has more True Knot members with her, nobody knows the Overlook the way that Dan does. And even though they had, like, I guess, bought it and were running a campsite there, you know, they didn't understand it the way that he did. And I love how they bring it all together, and it kind of comes full circle with what we read in The Shining, because you have Dan releasing Conchetta's steam, which kills a bunch of the True Knot members, if not most of them, and then he is freeing ghosts, and he's doing all of these things to where, you know, you can call certain Stephen King novels like Salem's Lot a vampire story, even though it's really about the town and the other people in it. It's like that is very focused on the vampire element. But then in this, you have vampires, you have ghosts, you have The Shining. There's so many things going on that I love it when he combines all of these different horror elements and makes them work really well.
I'd sort of forgotten like everything that happened in the big fight at the end. And I think, yeah, it's cool how much different stuff he shoved together, and it never feels weird, I guess, because you sort of, when characters have like The Shining, you sort of just accept that they can do all these things. And I think it was interesting to see Danny do all the stuff that he probably thought he couldn't do, because he recognizes that he's got less powerful as he's got older, but he also knows he's not as powerful as Abra. But I think the whole, like, it's almost like the bit in The Green Mile where John sucks like the cancer out of the prison warden's wife and then
yep.
gives it to the bad guy. It was the exact like same, the fact that he Danny just decided that this was something that he could do. Like, he was obviously seeing the steam when it was coming out of the patients that he was helping die in, and he recognized that it was red because it was probably like old and diseased and everything. The fact that he used that and thought that he could combine it with like his lockboxes to turn it into this weapon against them, I think was amazing. It was just proved that he, yeah, could still adapt his powers. This was probably something he'd never really thought about doing while he was drinking and recovering. He was mostly just sort of learning how to cope with them again, I guess. So to see him sort of do that and then also use the lockboxes as a weapon against the Trunot and sort of release them when they were back at the Overlook, where he knew they wouldn't really be as interested in him as they were, because they were back home, and also there was more powerful people around to kill instead. I just think, yeah, I think it was brilliant. It was so good to see Abra using the full extent of her power, but also to see Danny like do it as well, because I think he hadn't really had the chance to sort of embrace the things that he could do. And Abra was a huge part of defeating Rose, but she wouldn't have been able to do it without Danny as well. They very much had to work together to take her down, and that's probably what Rose was missing in the end, because she wanted to sort of do it herself, I guess, and be all like proud and everything and just take Abra on, and she thought she was the most powerful one out there, but she turns out she wasn't.
This is also where Dan finally gets some closure, because Billy and the ghost of Jack help him push Rose off of the observation platform that she's standing on, and that is what leads to her demise. And then before they leave, Jack's ghost waves goodbye to Dan, and he finally gets this closure that he hasn't had for years upon years. And I think King could have ended the book there, and it would have been a perfectly fine ending. But as we know, he loves epilogues. And, you know, this epilogue, I wasn't as bummed out by. Some of them have bummed me out a little, because I was like, oh, your other ending was better. But this one, I was like, okay, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I really like the ending with Jack, because I was sort of sad that they couldn't include that in the movie, because obviously the movie is a sequel to the Kubrick story, and Jack is in no way redemptive in that at all. Whereas in the book, he is at least a bit, tries to not murder his family when he's taking control. So I liked the fact that Jack just had a little help in hand. And I think Danny mentions quite a lot throughout the book how much he recognized that his dad wasn't a particularly good person, but that he also knows that it was the hotel that was making him do most of the stuff that he did, and it was a very complicated relationship for him because of how much he loved him, because he was his dad, but then also he had to witness him trying to kill him and things. So I think, yeah, that final moment of Jack choosing to sort of distract Rose or whatever he does to give Danny the time to defeat her, and then yeah, just that little bit at the end, just when he gets to say bye to him, I think was really all he needed to be reminded that he was trying his best to be a good person, and that he had clearly broken away from the hotel's influence. Like, he wasn't one of the horrible ghosts that was stuck. He was just kind of, he was there, but he wasn't nasty or anything. So yeah, I think it was that little bit of closure that Danny needed, just to be sort of reminded that his dad did have his problems, but ultimately he loved him, and had he been of his own faculties, he would have tried to save him the way he helped him save Abra at the end. But yeah, I think you're right. It probably could have ended there and it would have been fine. It was nice to, I guess, see Danny continuing his journey and still being sober. And I think he, to have him finally like tell the story of what he did to his, the woman and her baby that had been sort of following him around the entire time, he was too guilty to tell anyone, and the ghosts that were haunting him were always her and our kid. I think it was important for him to be able to finally get that off his chest and to realize that he had been sort of building up a lot more in his head than anyone else was really worried about. It was nice for him to get that kind of secondly the closure, I guess, of realizing that like that was the last part of his old life that he really needed to worry about, and he could just focus on going forward now. And it was nice to see him sort of have this kind of family relationship with Abra. It was nice to know that that Abra's mum and dad hadn't immediately like shoved him away because they thought he was weird or whatever. It was nice to see them sort of embrace him into the family. And I guess it makes you wonder like how Abra's powers are gonna develop and things, but it was a nice, to have a nice like sort of a happy ending at the end after everything that had happened.
I completely agree. And you have the fact that you see him trying to be as good of an influence on Abra as she's clearly been on him, because they talk about her 15th birthday and he's getting his 15 years sober chip. So those two things are very much related. And Abra has had such a huge impact on Dan's life. You can tell he wants to return the favor when he's warning her about all of these things that his father and he himself went through.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's the daddy didn't really have his parents there to help him growing up because he was sort of hiding a lot of stuff from Wendy, and he sort of cut himself off from Dick when he started drinking. So I think he realized the importance of not having someone there to go to speak to the stuff about. It clearly had on him what he was clearly missing. So he's very intent on being there for Abra and for helping her deal. And she sort of mentions drinking alcohol at a party, and he decides not to lecture her on that because he realizes like what most adults would do anyway, and the odds of her believing him and not trying it are probably very slim. But instead he focuses more on the sort of the anger stuff and the stuff related to her powers, but just because he knows how like interconnected they could be and what kind of problems that could cause for her, and just trying to I guess show her that her powers are normal and it's something she should embrace, but she just needs to be careful if they're getting stronger. So he's definitely kind of trying to provide that more supportive understanding role that I'm sure her parents will try to do, but they're never gonna like fully understand because they didn't go through the whole horror of the True Knot stuff, and also they just don't have the powers to really fully understand it as much as Danny and Abra understand each other.
Yeah, overall I thought this book was really well done, and you know, I'll have the movie episode coming up I guess in a few months. It took them a little while to adapt Dr. Sleep, you know, it wasn't an immediate thing right after the book came out, but you know, obviously Mike Flanagan had some challenges that he faced with that as to which of the things it should be a sequel of. And obviously there's a lot from the book in the movie, but I think the book really built on Danny's character as an adult and his relationship with Jack a little more because of how this ends.
Yeah, I think the book does a really good job of showing that Danny's not perfect either.
Yeah,
because it spends so much time on the stuff that he did when he was drunk and the amount of times he's moved around and things. It shows that this did have a terrible effect on him, a combo of the drinking and his powers and the overlook, like everything's sort of had this really bad effect on him. And even though he is the like hero of the story, it doesn't mean that he has been a perfect person the entire time. And I quite like that it shows that very realistically, but then he sort of brings it all like back himself. Like he makes the decision to stop drinking and like settle down and sort of try and build a life for himself, because that's kind of what he's always been missing. So yeah, I think the the, like, especially like you said, the beginning of the book is just a lot of time spent with him. I mean, if you've watched The Shining or read The Shining, you obviously like love Danny because he is the sort of the hero of the piece, I guess, and then sort of being chucked into this world of him and Dr. Sleep, and he's not this like perfect protagonist. It's quite like, oh right, okay. But then I think it is important to show that like the effect that this trauma can have on him growing up, but it doesn't mean that he's, I mean, Jack was probably a bad person teamed with all this stuff, and that's what happened to him. But Danny underneath it isn't a bad person, and he is trying very hard to get his life back on track, and the fact that he manages to do that is good. But it's a good journey to go with him on.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, I don't think I have any more thoughts on the book. I really enjoyed it. So, Kim, are you good to move on to ratings?
Yeah, go for it.
I gave this a 4 out of 5. It's not in my top 5, but it might be like a top 10 book for me.
I gave this 5 out of 5 when I reviewed it on Goodreads. And I can't remember if that's what I gave it the first time around because I couldn't see. I really enjoyed it. I love Stephen King books in general for the fact that they're really good, like, they're really good at like delving into a character, but then also having this like horrifying stuff. And I really enjoyed how much we got to re-delve into Danny, but then also Rose and Abra. It was really interesting to sort of have these three main characters that stories were all interwoven, and the sort of, there's not as many like actual terrifying proper scary bits, I guess, as there are in other books, but just the whole different powers that everyone has and the whole like history of the True Knot and stuff was so interesting and like horrifying, even if it wasn't actually properly scary all the time. I really enjoyed it, and I think, like, I feel like it's quite hard to do a sequel to The Shining because it's such a good book and it's such a popular property. Even if people haven't read the book, if they've just seen the film, it's got to be quite challenging to sort of dive back into that world and write a sequel. And I think he did a really good job of making it still very, have the Overlook at the center, but have a completely new story around about it. And I think it's impressive that he had this very amazing villain and her like cult with her, but still have the Overlook sort of hanging about in the middle. I think that was very cool. He could have just, I don't know, done something that went back to the Overlook entirely and sort of just dealt with those monsters again. I think it was impressive that he managed to create a whole new like sort of world, but still keep what happened in The Shining very centralized.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, Kim, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to talk about Stephen King at any opportunity.
Same. I do it every week. All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.